This is an Audio Wool original.
This episode of Fright Day is brought to you by Gates of Hell Chipotle Hot Sauce by Fright Day. Bold chipotle flavor blended with habanero peppers for just the right burn. Kissed with garlic and passion fruit. Zero human blood, like none at all. Visit shop.frightday.com before the first batch disappears.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. If you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/frightday.
Fright Day. I'm your host, Byron. These days, it seems like squeezing in a family vacation without at least a little bit of work is nearly impossible, and sometimes it may even be the catalyst for the visit entirely. But there are things worse than being distracted and distant while your family is flip-flopped and standing by. Your profession could be the reason an entire seaside town is polluted and cursed by a supernatural megalodon that eats everything around it. We'll talk about that tonight with a special guest as we review Adrian Grunberg's The Black Demon. I'm joined tonight by Kelly.
Hello!
And Sam can't make it because he's rigging.
He is rigging.
Vacation Queen, it's vacation season.
I didn't realize I was vacation queen. I kind of like being vacation queen.
Maybe it's just because I traditionally don't do any.
No, I'm a spoiled bitch when it comes to vacations. Okay. It's a true story.
I don't need to talk
I'm a very entitled snot with vacations.
I mean, do you have anything in the books or what? What's going on?
I sure do. You know, funny you should mention this. Sam and I are really trying hard to get a dream road trip vacation underway, but we just keep hitting potholes, man.
Was this the road trip that's going to end in Montauk in August?
No, I don't think we're not going to go quite that far. I mean, it would be really, really cool. But instead, for my 40th birthday, Sam offered to take me on a Fundango road trip, and we were going to go down past Skinwalker Ranch, over to Area 51, up past Mount Shasta through Bigfoot country, and then back across near one of the Air Force bases that there are lots of UFO sightings at. So it was going to be kind of like a Captain Kelly's road tour. Anyhow, I don't know if we're going to pull it off. It's feeling like slimmer odds these days. So the vacation queen's feeling a little bitchy about that. But
what are you doing in September?
I don't know. What are we doing in September,
right,
Byron?
Well, I think we might be heading to Vernal, Utah for Phenomicon.
It is the worst name.
Pretty isolated, weird little event in eastern Utah.
Almost the entire cast of characters is revolving around the show Secrets of Skinwalker Ranch. It's got all of the amazing crew, mostly Dragon.
Okay, Dragon. Travis Taylor.
Have you watched a single episode?
Absolutely not. I don't watch that.
Okay,
show.
You need to watch one episode at least.
Do I have to? I don't know if I do.
You do, especially if we're going to go to this.
Dragon Arnold, Travis Taylor, Eric Bard, Caleb Bench. Are they just making up names at this point?
Nope. These are the people that are in that show. You would understand and know all of them.
A handful of folks from Expedition Bigfoot are going to be there. George Knapp, of course.
Did we get press passes?
We may even have a table that people can like come and hang
out. Holy fuck.
Yeah, it should be fun. There's going to be an escorted trip to the perimeter of Skinwalker Ranch. I don't know what that means. There's ghost hunts in downtown Vernal, Utah. So much more. But yeah, I think that that's kind of what I'm aiming for our end of summer little hangout. So if anyone wants to get weird with us, that's probably where we'll be.
I could not be more for this idea.
September 6th through the 9th. And immediately after that, I'm driving back to Salt Lake City, and I'm flying back to the desert. I'm going to Palm Springs again, Kelly.
You're like a Palm Springs vacation king now, so you can't even make fun of me for my vacation queening.
That's true. I'm a future snowbird. I just like it there. I think that's probably where I'm going to set up home base. I might just sell this house now that it's worth, I don't know, three times as much since Missoula's like a new
hot spot. Are you really going to do that? Is that what's happening?
No, I would never sell this place.
I mean, you would make a lot of money. I still don't think you'd make enough to afford a place in Palm Springs. No offense.
That's probably
true. Those places are real expensive.
Patreon.com/FrightDay, thefrightdaysociety.org. Come on, guys. I want to live in Palm Springs.
I mean, I feel like we're going to have to do some major upticks in order for that to happen.
Uh-huh.
We could
numbers
just start a Kickstarter
up.
For a Palm Spring vacation house for Byron.
Well, I did that for the chair. Remember the bone throne?
I feel like in the world of inflation, people really stressing about money, I feel like that could be a really successful campaign.
You should notice, I don't have a throne made of bones behind me.
He doesn't. It's true.
We did. Really I mean, doesn't. There was a handful of really great folks who did support my cause of buying a plastic chair that looked like a throne made out of bones.
Where did their money go, incidentally?
Well, it went into the studio over here. It just didn't go directly into a bones throne, so.
Okay.
It's
I mean,
okay.
A studio
the
really
money,
great too.
Money didn't
Thanks,
go.
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. We continue to expand this thing with the video stuff that we do for Twitch at twitch.tv/FrightDay. I think our live episode's coming up soon. I don't know if it's this next week or the week after that, but if you want to know when we go live first, of course, you follow or subscribe at twitch.tv/FrightDay.
Woo, woo.
Really appreciate your support, especially after all the hard work that we put in, Kelly. And speaking of work, it's time to get back to
it. Get back to work.
Because these DVD copies of A Home at the End of the World aren't going to put themselves away. It's time for staff picks.
But they never tell you if it's any good.
Is there a werewolf movie with E.T.'s mom in it?
The Howling Horror, straight ahead.
That movie feels recent to me. That's terrifying to think about.
It's not. It's not recent at all.
I've got a bit of a spoiler. I don't want to tell you everything about my review of the movie that we're reviewing tonight for our main event, but I am going to tell you it was not my favorite. In the spirit of less than perfect shark movies, I would like to recommend a gem.
Oh.
You know, those who have listened to the show long enough know that I have a very weird lack of memory. I think I can probably name on one hand the number of memories I have, like, before the age of 15.
What?
I know. I don't know what's wrong. I've talked to our psychiatrist about it a lot, and he has no answers for me.
So
he thinks it might
13,
have to do with my ADD.
12.
I don't know.
Now you're diagnosed ADD.
Oh, no. I've been diagnosed that for a long ass time.
Oh,
you kidding
God.
Me? Anyhow, he thinks it might be that, or maybe my, like, unchecked anxiety at that
Could
age.
Be.
Who knows?
Yeah. You've been in survival mode for the past 30 years or so.
My body could be an industry leader for the production of cortisol, I'm pretty sure. Here's what I will tell you. This movie is bad enough that it made it its way through my inability to remember anything. And I actually have a memory of watching this movie when I was like 10.
Spit it out.
Jaws the Revenge.
Instinctively, man has always been drawn to the sea. Its beauty, its mystery, its secrets. But there is also a vague uncertainty, a sense of intrusion into an alien world where man is unwelcome and completely at the mercy of the most terrifying predator on Earth. Man's deepest fear has risen again. Jaws, the Revenge. This time, it's personal.
This is not one, two, or three. This is four.
Jaws, the Revenge. Okay.
You might recognize it as the one with Mario Van Peebles.
Don't know. I don't even know who that is.
You don't know who that is. Okay. Well, it's all about the widow of Chef Brody, because obviously
it's Chief Brody. It's not. You said Chef.
Chef Brody. Sorry, I was actually this morning, I was researching when the next season of The Bear comes out, so I'm really sorry. I was in chef mode. I apologize. Yeah, Chief Brody's widow, who's played by the original actress who played Chief Brody's wife in the movie.
Lorraine
so
Gray.
We've got some carryover, right? And actually, we've got other returning actors, which almost makes it more sad, I think.
Okay.
Like the fact that this isn't just a whole new cast. I don't know. If it was just Mario Van Peebles and like some other weirdos, I would feel a little bit better about it being a bad movie. Mm-hmm. But the fact that we've got some returning cast members really bums me out. Lorraine Gary playing Ellen Brody. Okay. Michael Caine somehow got tricked into doing this movie. I really don't know how. One of the brothers, if you remember from Jaws 1, they had two kids. One of the brothers gets killed, even though in Jaws 3, he was terrified of the water. He's just randomly, nonchalantly out in the water in this one and gets killed.
Hmm.
Again, in the spirit of wildly unrealistic shark movies, the premise is that this shark is the same shark and it holds a grudge. And so it has literally traveled in order to track down Chief Brody's surviving family.
Okay.
Yeah. We are in the Caribbean. Somehow Bruce has made it down from Amity and is stalking the family of Chief Brody. It's bad. I really do like the fact that Mario Van Peebles and his dad were both in it together. I thought that was kind of cute. That's where it ends. It's wildly bad. I was watching the preview for it and trying to remember. I don't think I had any recollection at the age of 10 whether this was a movie that took itself seriously or not, because I don't think I would have even been able to identify what that meant at that point. I feel like it did. I'm going to rewatch it, Byron, just because why not at this point? We've given a lot of this week to bad shark movies, so I'm just going to double down. I think that it is kind of like the movie we reviewed tonight in the sense that it isn't an over-the-top cocaine bear laugh fest. It is meant to be a serious, scary movie. It is ranked the worst horror movie, number one of all time, on Rotten Tomatoes.
That doesn't make any sense.
It has a 0% with the highest number of votes. So it is the worst.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I mean,
the worst. So there you go. Okay. I recommend a double feature.
This time it's personal.
Yeah, it is real personal. Oh, it's so bad.
This is something I did not know. This was the last Jaws film.
Yeah, it killed the Jawses.
But in a July 2018 interview with Steven Spielberg, he said that there was going to be a prequel focusing on the 1945 sinking of the USS Indianapolis with a young version of Robert Shaw, who played Quince.
Wait a second. That's the thing that Wes was talking about on...
It was not. That was 1906.
No. It was a different one. He was talking about a specific type of shark that ate survivors of shipwrecks, and he used the USS Indianapolis as his example. It was like a white-tipped something or another.
It's out of the bag. Wes is the guest on the show in a minute, and we'll get to
Sorry.
That.
Sorry. Apologies.
But before... I'd like to talk about a film that I probably am not going to hate, but I have not seen yet. This is a blind recommendation of a film in one of my favorite subgenres, eco-horror. And also, speaking of Michael Caine, he was in a film called The Swarm, which isn't this, but I've talked about lots of films like that. Piranha, Savage Bees, Frogs, Squirm. I don't know how I slept on this one. It's from 1977. It's called Day of the Animals.
Although the effect on living organisms is not yet known, people are being advised to remain indoors whenever possible, especially those in high altitude areas where the sun's rays would be naturally stronger.
Hello, dog. I told you that sun seemed damn peculiar today. God send the plague down on us because we're just a bunch of no good fellas.
Sure are that, Sam.
Something strange in the woods, and I don't know what it is. Well, these city folks sure wouldn't take much of panicking.
Damn it, Doc, get out of here!
Oh, I've never even heard of it.
Well, God sent a plague down on us because we're a bunch of no good fellers.
Okay, so it's religious?
The depletion of the Earth's ozone layer causes animals above the altitude of 5,000 feet to begin attacking humans. A group of hikers led by Steve Buckner are trapped in the military quarantine zone and must fight their way out. Eagles, vultures, owls, snakes, cougars, bears, dogs, wolves, even tarantulas, and so much more. This is a film about animals. You know how The Happening kind of attacked people, but with wind?
Yep.
This is animals actually just attacking people because of aerosol.
Ozone depletion.
CFC aerosol. Do you know what that is? Is that just what they used to use in hairspray in the 80s?
CFCs.
They don't use those anymore.
I mean, I think for the most part, no.
Good.
I bet you could find some cans at the dollar store that do, but beyond that, well, I don't
we're
think
most
so.
Definitely above 5,000 feet right now, right?
I'm not. I'm at like 3,400 where I sit.
So we're safe from all of the potential animal attacks.
If we were in Butte, though, Butte's the Mile High City, we'd be above it then, and everybody in Butte would die.
I mean, not everyone. Animals do fill up eventually. It looks like a hoot. Don't know how I missed it. It stars a couple folks that you would recognize, mainly Leslie Nielsen.
What?
Also Christopher George.
So is it a comedy then?
I don't believe it is. No, Linda Day George is also in this. You know, there's a standout line by Leslie Nielsen that I took note of. You lily-livered punk, I am running this camping trip, which is pretty fun. It's directed by William Girdler, kind of a low-budget guy that was pretty influential at the time. His first films, Three on a Meat Hook and Asylum of Satan. He did Sheba Baby, and then he had a big-ish breakout hit with Grizzly in 1976, which some people have seen. Some people have heard of that.
Wow.
Kind of a bit Maximum Overdrive-y, but with like a wildlife vehicle, I guess, and not machines. They're animals that are attacking people.
Okay.
But it's not their fault. It's not their fault, Kelly. It's ozone psychosis.
I mean, unfortunately, I don't know enough about any of these things to be able to say whether it sounds utterly batshit.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the thing is, I struggle to be afraid in a movie like that because I empathize more with the animals anyway.
I think that's kind of the point of the eco-horror thing of the 70s. Critics didn't love this. They said that it had poor special effects, a goofy premise, banal execution. It's pretty derivative of The Birds, according to them, and it had on-the-nose environmental themes, but I don't know. I love these films. I think these ones are so fun. I don't know how they treat in animals, and I think we talked a little bit about that with Wes on Behind the Screams this week when we were talking about Cocaine Bear.
Yes, we did.
Which you can listen to at thefrightdaysociety.org. But I love 70s eco-horror, and I'm absolutely going to check this out. If you like that kind of stuff, do that as well. I believe someone may have uploaded it to YouTube, so you can...
Oh.
Check it out there. But
wow, good find, B.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. Also excited to talk about a shark film as we kick off summer. It couldn't have been a better timing. Like, as soon as we got this in the books, the Meg 2 trailer dropped. I'm in shark mode.
Me too, obviously. Should we do a Jaws fest? You know, you always want to do a Saw fest, but like, I think maybe we should do a Jaws fest.
Well, I actually got pitched the concept for another fest. Let's see, someone sent me a text actually just a couple days ago. I don't know why I'm derailing the show for this. Scream Until You Dream, an all-night movie marathon of the Scream films. So that's kind of
okay,
fun,
but
too.
But I just watched all of those.
We've got a special guest back on the show to help us experience this black demon, and I guess it's time to do that now.
Let's do it.
Hope you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
The Black Demon is a 2023 supernatural shark horror film directed by Adrian Grunberg. Oilman Paul Sturgis takes his family to Baja Negra, the site of Paul's best performing rig, but the vibrant Mexican coastal town he once knew has mysteriously crumbled as the townsfolk believe the rig has awoken a shark of legend known as the Black Demon. With his family scared to be left alone, they arrive on the rig only to have their boat ferociously attacked by the massive black shark, laying claim to local waters, aggressively protecting Mother Nature against human threats. It destroys everything in its path. Paul and his family are now stranded with the few men who have survived. Under constant attack by the giant monster and with time ticking away, Paul must find a way to get his family back to shore alive. And I have to come clean real quick before we introduce our guest. For the first time in the history of this podcast, and I'm embarrassed to admit this, I was not able to watch The Black Demon.
Byron failed, but I won.
My screening link expired like an hour before I went to watch it this morning. Maybe I dodged a bullet. Who knows? Thank goodness we have wildlife biologist and co-host of the podcast Tooth and Claw here, Wes Larson, to help us talk about this movie. Thanks, Wes, for showing up.
Yeah, happy to be here.
I'm sorry as well.
It's okay. I'm jealous.
Well, oh, no.
You know, it's good because we want to hear more from Wes anyway, because Wes, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've spent a decent amount of time in this corner of the world and you know quite a bit about sharks.
Yeah.
And you can talk to us about animal attacks. So kind of like way totally. More than Byron would have to say anyway.
This is going to be wonderful. The director, Adrian, he's been in the industry for a while. He was assistant director on a bunch of stuff from Frida to Man on Fire to Apocalypto, where he may have made a friend. Mm-hmm. His first feature was the Mel Gibson vehicle, Get the Gringo.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was back in 2012. And then he did
friend.
Rambo Last Blood, which was the fifth film in that franchise. He didn't win, but he got nominated Worst Director at the Razzies that year. Almost got that Golden Raspberry. This film was not shot off the coast of Mexico. They started shooting December
DR
2021. Yeah, Dominican Republic. Kelly, you've been there.
Yeah, my sister's there right now. I don't... Yeah, I have lots of thoughts and feelings about that too. Wes, any insight into why they might film there instead of the actual location of the movie?
I don't have any. I mean, I did, like, I immediately clocked that it wasn't in Baja, because Baja is very arid. It's like deserty throughout. And this, like, this movie has lots of big palm trees and like kind of green and yeah, it doesn't look like Baja at all. So I'm not totally sure why they decided. There's plenty of parts in Mexico that look exactly like the DR kind of. So I don't know why they said like, this is going to be Baja. We're sticking to that. So
yeah. That is really weird. Premise of the movie, Byron, I don't know if you want me to give you a quick summary.
I think I kind of went through the whole thing, right? Like Paul shows up to a town in rougher shape than when he left it.
Yeah, I mean, basically we have like a super stereotypical asshole oil executive who is responsible for the utter destruction of the natural landscape in the area. And that has also taken the form of a giant megalodon demon shark.
Yeah.
And so the townsfolk are aware of this. They've seen it.
They are.
Well, it's a curse. It's not just so like the oil itself was a curse. And then the shark is a metaphor for the curse of the oil. I mean, maybe that's like, I don't know. Because there is an actual legend of a demon shark.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether that even relates to this. Wes, is that something you've ever run into?
The actual legend?
Yeah.
No, I've never heard of the actual legend.
I've done some reading about it. It seems to be just something that like fishermen on the coast see, and it's like an urban legend. It ranges between 30 feet to 60 feet long shark. Some people say it's as big as a school bus. Sometimes it's like 100 times larger than a normal shark. But one of the things they always go to is that it's black as night or ash gray. And it has piercing eyes that are, quote, almost somehow darker.
Okay.
I mean, to me, I had
no idea this was a real cryptid.
Yeah, there's something about, I don't know if this science even checks out, but that if there is some abnormally large shark, that it could be like on the high end of outliers for great whites with hypermelanism, which was not something I had heard of before, but that was the thing that I read in terms of like a supposedly possible scientific explanation for it.
Yeah. I mean, how long did they say it was?
60 feet.
Yeah, so yeah, it's
30
not
to 60 feet. Yeah, I mean 60. Yeah. Well, I mean,
yeah, 20 would be like, okay, you know, that's like in the realm. There have been 20-foot great whites. Mm-hmm. Anything over 25 is like totally anecdotal. There's people that have reported 25-foot great whites, but if you're talking like double what's been reported, then
it's just unlikely.
It's not happening. Yeah.
So what about a whale shark?
Yeah, whale sharks can get up to 50 feet long.
Okay.
So we're a little bit closer, and they are a bit darker, completely gentle, though. I mean, they're like filter feeders, and they eat small fish. You can swim with them, and you're in absolutely no danger. It wouldn't be much of like a scary demon shark.
Byron, In your experiences as a wildlife, or not Byron, sorry,
I was gonna
Wes,
say.
In your experiences as a wildlife biologist, how much stock do you put in the show Monster Quest? Because there is an episode of Monster Quest about this shark.
Some 70% of the Earth's surface is covered by water, but people are encountering sharks much more often than you'd expect. Now imagine a shark so large that it's 2 to 3 times the size of a great white.
Yeah, kind of a school bus size animal.
This episode's called Mega Jaws.
It is.
Pretty little, to be honest.
Good.
That's what I was hoping.
I'm not someone that completely dismisses cryptids like out of hand.
And that's why we love you, Wes.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to believe in some of that stuff, or at least like keep this tiny little window of like belief. But I think, you know, when you're talking about megafauna, when you're talking about an animal that big, those animals show up. Like you see those animals. Like there's a white whale in Australia right now, a white humpback whale, and people see it because it's unique and it's interesting, and so it gets seen a lot. And so if you have a 60-foot shark in a place like Baja where there's like, you know, relatively clear water and a lot of people out in the water, it's going to get seen, and these days someone's going to get a video or a photo or something of it. So,
well, and there was actually a potential sighting. There was a show on Discovery in 2021 called The Mystery of the Black Demon Shark.
Of course there was.
I tried to watch an episode of it today. Yeah. I signed up for Discovery just to watch it. But
yeah,
apparently later in the series, they end up dumping like a simulated whale milk and using like inflatable blue whales to lure it up.
Okay.
I
that sounds
don't believe...
questionable.
Well, yeah, I don't know about the process of whale milk luring a shark. Is that something that actually does work?
No, I don't think so. I mean, what will lure a shark is a dead whale.
Yeah.
They're attracted to whale carcasses. I don't know if whale milk would do it for a shark. They are interested by any kind of new scent in the water. They have extremely fine-tuned senses, and they can pick up on really minute concentrations of scent. But I don't know. I don't see that really, really triggering a shark. I could see it being like more of a trigger for an orca, because they do prey on baby whales, and that's something that I could see it like being like, oh, you know, we got a lactating whale. That means there's a calf around.
Okay.
So for me, that makes a little more sense, but I'm not going to like say that happens.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. The most they got was like a drone shot or maybe even a helicopter shot of a shadow in the water.
Nice.
That's the big.
Was it like the shadow of the helicopter?
Oh, it might have been. I could pull it up.
No.
But.
Of course not.
I don't believe they had a solid finding at the end of the day.
Oh, shoot.
Still a mystery.
Okay.
Darn it,
yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we discussed the possibility of a great white shark. That's not really possible in reality.
Couldn't be that big.
I mean, no. Unless they're just greatly exaggerating the size and it's actually like 20 or 25 feet. Then maybe.
Yeah. But even then, I mean, I don't know.
Even less likely, I'm thinking a manta ray.
A 60-foot manta ray?
I mean, they're smaller than, like... They across, like a manta ray across its wings can be like 12 feet. They can be pretty big. You would never mistake a manta ray for a great white or for any kind of like macro predatory shark.
No. Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Now that we've cleared all that up, this great feature film here.
This family shows up in this little town in Mexico. It is so overwhelmingly like gross, over the top, yucky, white, rich American, hostile to everybody. And it's very clear they're driving through this town and they recognize that like some of the cute places that they had enjoyed as American tourists before are no longer there. And they're like, what's going on? This is weird.
Yeah.
They get out to ask for directions to another place, and the locals are hostile to the like super aggro white male
truly like the least likable family ever too. I feel like they want you to like them, but they like the siblings are constantly fighting.
Yeah,
the parents
are
just like awful. It's bad.
And the mom is from Mexico, from Puerto Vallarta, and seems decent, but also you're like, why is she with this awful human? Like, and the only explanation you have, which makes it hard to judge him without judging her, is that she's really enjoyed having money for all this time and that she's put up with this horrific asshole of a human. So, like, we're supposed to be looking at this all-American cute family that just happens to be on a work/family trip, but really, I'm just looking at the reason that we can't travel internationally without wearing a Canadian flag patch on our backpacks.
Right. It's funny because they show this town and they're trying to make it seem like very dangerous and run down. And it's like just like shots of kids like playing.
Right.
And that, but there's this, like this eerie music over it. It's like, wait, this is not right. Scary. This seems charming to me. This seems like a charming little seaside town.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've got like some older Mexican guys that are like slumped back in their chair with their hats right. over their face, just having yeah, a nap.
Just quiet, like, quiet little seaside village.
It wasn't scary. And that's where my theory comes in. Okay, so this is when I start thinking. So originally,
I don't like this. I disagree already.
Originally, I'm like, okay, so the way that they are reacting to everything doesn't seem normal. Like even for like an asshole family, a non-asshole family, the reactions just aren't normal. But I could imagine this being like what aliens would think a family like this would react to. And then as the movie kept going, I changed my theory and I decided that it was probably written by AI. Because like if they're pulling all these stories from the internet and like it's very clear, like, okay, for a white upper class family, a town of dark skinned people is scary even if they aren't doing anything. Oil rigs are evil and a demon shark from some ancient religion, which I don't think that connection is true. In the movie, they make a connection. What was it? It wasn't the Aztecs, was it?
I don't know. My eyes had kind of glazed over by that point when they
They said that there used to be like sacrifices to this demon shark god.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like of children to keep it. Anyhow, so the whole thing just makes no sense. And so I really do think like just as we go through the rest of the review, I would like everybody to consider the possibility that this was in fact not written by humans.
All right.
Well, I mean, I feel like it was written probably before the release of ChatGPT-3, Kelly. However, that's an interesting theory.
No, maybe before 4, but it might have been when 3 was out.
Maybe.
I will say for any movie I've seen, this is probably the closest to where I would believe that, because it is just like... Like there, it's such a talky movie too. For like being a movie about a terrorizing demon shark, there's hardly any shark in this movie. Like I would guess total shark time is less than 2 minutes, and there's like hardly any like attack scenes. It's truly just like them talking about this like deity and the oil and how we're like fucking up the planet and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like it just. I mean, I truly had to really. Focus. It was hard.
So, yeah. My favorite point was when Byron, just to bring you up to speed.
Please, I would appreciate that.
The dad is there to, he works for an oil company and he's there to inspect an offshore oil rig. It's weird because the person that was supposed to take him all the way there doesn't take him all the way there. He like just takes him to one point and says, I can't go any further, and gives him his own boat to go the rest of the way.
Okay.
Meanwhile, his wife and kids are back at this cute little like seaside, you know,
restaurant
bar, get into a fight with the locals, which was again like the way this fight progressed was so strange. This local comes over and is harassing them and being, you know, creepy. The mom immediately smashes a bottle on his head and is like cool. threatening to cut everyone, gets her kids behind her. It's like 0 to 60 in like 5 seconds. I'm like, wait, what? Like, I consider to myself to be a pretty protective mom, and I can't even fathom that being the direction that I go in that scenario. I was like, but maybe artificial intelligence would think that.
What's the representation of the Mexican people like? Because I was kind of curious.
Horrible.
This is the guy who did Horrible. Get the Gringo. I was like, is he an American? And then I dug a little bit deeper. Adrian, he was raised in Spain by Argentinian Jewish parents and then moved to Mexico for a while, where he lived there for 15 years. So,
well, he's apparently hung around Mel Gibson way too long.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's possible.
Because... It's
I will say they like paint at the beginning. You're like, oh, wow, all these locals are very hostile and like very aggressive. Mm-hmm. And then as it goes, you learn that it's like, oh, this oil facility has brought on all like drought, and which is like you don't really even realize that's a thing until the end. Yeah. Yep. Like the demon shark and drought and all these environmental like other things that have happened because of this curse. All the people are kind of just like. swept up in that. And that's why they're all kind of like grumpy and angry and everything. And that doesn't, of course, excuse like the guy sexually harassing the like 12-year-old daughter.
Of course not.
That's
but still.
Okay. Okay.
It was very heavy-handed as like, this is anti-oil, you know, whatever, which, you know, great. I'm, you know, I'm all on board with that.
Yeah.
Like they are just hitting you with a hammer with it. It's not like nuanced at all.
Sure.
No. And it doesn't even make that compelling of a case because as the story evolves, the guy goes out to the rig. The mom now is running from these hostile locals with her kids and finds a boat with a guy in it and begs the guy to take them out to the rig. Now, the guy says no at first, and then she offers him a wad of cash. Then he decides to take them. But you quickly learn that the reason nobody will go all the way out to the oil rig is because any boat that goes near it and then tries to come back gets eaten by the 60-foot black demon shark.
Great. Okay. So there's a rational reason to not do that.
Yeah. Right.
But he still takes really money guy, and like...
Right. Yeah. I mean, like maybe he was just hoping.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Or maybe he just was like really nice and said like, look at these poor kids and those guys might do something. So I'm going to help them. Anyhow, so she gets the kids out there. Meanwhile, the dad is out there fighting with the two remaining oil rig workers because the whole thing has gone to hell. And he's yelling at them for it being all run down. And it comes to light. The whole place has always been a shit show. It's always been leaking oil. It's never passed a safety test. And he's been signing off on it for like 15 years.
Yeah.
It's really entirely his fault and his company's fault.
Whenever you get an underwater shot, there's just like oil billowing everywhere.
Yeah.
Really?
Oil and
Jesus.
Body parts.
Yeah.
Like heads and legs.
But that was a vision.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was the little girl having
a vision in this, huh?
When people go in the water, the shark can make them have visions and see things.
Yep.
So the little girl falls into the water at one point and she sees just tons of body parts floating everywhere. And then they pull her out.
This is a supernatural.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about that. Is that the extent of this shark's ability?
It.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good.
I mean,
that's pretty
really
much how
big.
Much they explain it, too.
He's also, I think we're supposed to understand that he's very old by virtue of the fact that he is very scarred up.
Okay.
He looks like the shark equivalent of a really like racially insensitive Mexican cowboy from like a 1960s Western is the way I would describe it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what episode it was. 174. We can't talk about this movie without talking about the Meg.
Yeah.
The sequel is coming, yeah?
Yeah, it's an odd week to be talking about this because I did just watch the trailer recently.
Number one difference before you go into it, because I do want to throw this out.
Yeah.
Meg clearly does not take itself seriously, which is what makes Meg at least fun.
Yeah, and it looks like Meg 2 is going to be like
even more,
even wilder, almost like a Piranha to Piranha 3D or 3DD kind of move.
And to me, that's what made Cocaine Bear fun, was like it was very self-aware. I don't feel like this movie was self-aware at all, which again is a point for
it
being AI.
Oh my God. Which of course is what we just talked about, Kelly, on Behind Screams this week.
It was.
A bunch about Cocaine Bear. The Meg in the Meg came out of a trench.
Was it the Marianas Trench or was it?
I think it was.
Okay.
Where did this shark come from? The black demon.
It was conjured.
That's the thing, is that they conjure it, but then they also say it's a megalodon, which is a prehistoric shark. So it doesn't, it's kind of like they're firing on all cylinders, like trying to come up with the origin story for this demon. Like part of it's religious, part of it's like mythological, part of it's cryptid, and then it's also paleontology. You know, it's like, it's everything all at once.
Everything.
Yeah.
So a little bit over a month ago, it looks like you spent some time with sharks. You're not afraid of like a 2.5 million year old megalodon like popping up, right?
No, I mean, I'd be afraid of one if they existed, but they've been gone for a while. And again, like if this were an animal that currently existed in our oceans, the oceans are massive and like, there are like a coelacanth is a prehistoric fish that they rediscovered in the 70s, which is pretty crazy. But this is a very deep dwelling fish that was rediscovered. And then since then, we found more. I think if you find, you know, a coelacanth is probably 7-8 feet long. If you can find one of those in like some of the deepest oceans in the world, a megalodon would show up too. Like sooner or later, one of these sharks show up. they just don't exist anymore. This is an animal that's been extinct for a very, very long time.
Probably feels really silly having to say that this does not exist, but
it's gone. It's silly. It's like something that comes up because you do get these Discovery Channel shows where they're like searching for a megalodon. You know, megalodon was spotted. We're gonna go find it, and it does make people think that maybe they're still around, and they're not. But it's cool that they were at one point because they're a really neat animal.
Yeah. What experience do you have with sharks? How much time have you spent around sharks?
Quite a bit. You know, growing up, they were my absolute favorites. So as I, you know, became an adult and was able to travel a little bit, I have taken a number of trips that have been focused on seeing sharks. And so I've spent a lot of time with whale sharks, a little bit of time with great whites, bull sharks, sandbar sharks, nurse sharks, hammerhead sharks, a lot of species of shark that I've been able to swim with. So
they call them the bears of the sea.
Yeah, I think that.
No, I don't think they
somewhat
say that.
Okay.
I don't think you just that. Make that up.
Yeah, I just did.
Okay, so Wes, then, kind of like you were talking about with bears, then with sharks, if you were stuck in a giant saltwater lake with one shark, what species of shark would it be?
I mean, there's dozens and dozens of species of shark that are completely harmless to humans. Mm. For me, I would just say a whale shark because they're harmless and they're absolutely beautiful and really charismatic.
Okay.
But like most of the shark species that you would pick, you'd be absolutely fine for the rest of your life in that saltwater lake with them. There's very few shark species that actually are predatory towards humans.
And what ones are those? Great white, hammerhead?
You know, hammerheads don't often, they have bitten people, but it's usually like someone's hooked one or something and they end up getting bit. Great whites are responsible for the most fatal attacks and attacks in general, I think. Mm-hmm. Then next, or actually, don't quote me on that, but definitely fatal attacks. Tiger sharks and bull sharks would be your two and three. Oceanic white tip sharks are the ones that kill a lot of like.
I've heard of that one.
They're the ones that get shipwreck survivors. So like the SS Indianapolis probably was mostly oceanic white tips and some other sharks that came in there. There's a number of others that have killed people, but those are kind of like the top three are definitely great whites, tiger sharks, and bull sharks.
Okay.
And what areas of the world do you most frequently encounter those types of sharks? What are the least safe waters to swim in and what are the most safe waters to swim in?
For bull sharks, the number one place you're going to get bit is Florida. Florida has like a really high number of bull shark bites.
More reason to stay away from Florida.
They don't often lead to fatalities, but a lot of people do get bit there. Great whites are found throughout the oceans, like all the way up to Alaska and all the way down to southern Argentina, Australia. Okay. They do prefer more temperate waters. So some hot spots for them are like Northern California, South Africa, Southern Australia. Those are places where you have a higher than average chance of running into one of them. And then tiger sharks are tropical and subtropical sharks. They're more like if you're swimming in Hawaii or Fiji or somewhere like that, that's the places where you have a higher than average chance of seeing one of them. Yeah.
So everywhere, nowhere safe.
Yeah.
Nowhere safe, but honestly, it's just, again, like such a low chance. And if you learn the base amount of like what to pay attention to before you get in the water and what to do if you do see a shark, there's a lot you can do to avoid actually having a problem.
Ooh, like what? What should we pay attention to before we get in the water?
A couple really important things are timing. So like early in the morning, late at night are times when sharks do tend to do a lot more hunting. So those are times you maybe want to be a little bit more careful. Murky water that has a lot of prey in it. So if there's like a dead whale nearby or sea lions or something like that, that's something to pay attention to. If there's dolphin activity, actually, it's more likely there's a shark as well because something brought those dolphins there that would also bring a shark there. So paying attention to that sort of thing is really signs and warnings. And then if you actually are in the water and you're being approached by a shark, the main thing is just to stay calm, not to splash, and face the shark. If the shark's coming toward you, if you have anything at all that you can put in between you and the shark, some sort of barrier, even if it's a swim fin or like a pole of any kind, just keep facing that shark and just push it away whenever it comes in. More often than not, that'll be more than enough to convince the shark that you're not worth the trouble, you're not food. The main thing is just staying calm and getting to safety, though.
Cool.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like I need to practice that.
Why? You live in Montana, Kelly.
Yeah.
You don't need to practice that.
Yeah, I guess really the only ocean I ever swim in is the Oregon coast. Wes, my odds are pretty decent there, right? Like, we're pretty okay?
There are great whites there.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay, cool.
But
cool.
Again, just being awesome. Careful. It's such a small, small chance when you think of the millions and millions and millions of people that go in the water every single day.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the fact that there's only a handful of shark attacks every year, it's just not. It's not a likely thing.
Well, let's speak of those odds real quick. Last time you were on the show, we talked about the film Beast, and we kind of went into the Tsavo lions. There's Jaws, of course, like one specific shark that attacked many right. people. Does that happen? Like in this, we've got the black demon who repeatedly is attacking people. Is there a story in history of one specific shark attacking more than one person?
Yeah. In 1912 in New Jersey, that's actually the story that Jaws was based off of.
Okay.
There was a number of people that were killed by a shark or multiple sharks. And there's people that strongly believe it was a great white. There's people that strongly believe it was a bull shark. We haven't done that yet on Tooth and Claw, but it is one on our list. So I haven't really dove into it at the level that I'd like to. But I will say for almost all of the shark species, great whites are the largest macro predator sharks. So that's the shark that eats larger prey. It's not one that's filter feeding or eating like tiny little fish. It's eating bigger fish or marine mammals. They're the ones that we would potentially be like the best source of food for. And we're just not, because we are so bony for them that for them to process us, it almost uses more energy than it would that they get from eating us.
Like the caloric intake. Interesting.
Yeah. So for them, like that's why often someone will get bit by a shark. It's investigating them as a source of food. Mm-hmm. It bites them. It realizes like, okay, this isn't as soft or as fatty as I wanted. And it just stops, you know, and often that bite is devastating enough that the person still bleeds out or something bad happens to them. They lose a limb, but it's not, the shark has decided, okay, this isn't food, or it's not food that's going to make sense for me.
Understood. Yeah.
So it doesn't.
But in 1916, it's hard to tell if it was
12,
one shark or
12.
Was it 16? It might have been 16.
I just pulled it up.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell with recording at that point to know if it was one shark, right?
You know, I've seen some of the like drawings of the corpses that they found afterward, and they were like completely cut in half and whatnot. And that to me is much more indicative of a great white, because they do have such a devastating bite. Mm-hmm. But a bull shark definitely would be capable of that as well. So, and bull sharks are much less discerning. Like they will, to them, we maybe are a better food source. That's a shark where it's going to be lots of bites, a much more prolonged attack. Whereas a great white, if a great white is actually trying to eat someone, it's over very quickly. It's a few bites and it's over. A bull shark would take a bit longer.
And in the case of the black demon.
One bite.
One bite?
One bite. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What's that's a quick way to go, really.
Yeah. Something that's fascinating to me about Megalodon, really quickly here, is that sharks' skeletons are made of cartilage. So when they don't fossilize like other, you know, dinosaurs and prehistoric animals do. And so with Megalodon, really all we've found is teeth and remnants of jaws and stuff. And so size estimates that we have for Megalodon are just based on teeth fossils. So there's really not much that we know about them, because there isn't a great fossil record. But if like those models are correct, this is the largest fish that's ever existed and the second largest marine animal that's ever existed after blue whales. Which is pretty crazy that a big, like, predatory shark is the second largest marine mammal ever. It's pretty cool.
Okay, so do you think with the models and what you know about animals, do you think that it is pretty close, or do you think it's likely that it's wildly different from what we have been led to believe?
No, I think it's close. I mean, I think, like, paleontologists
are... You don't think it was, like, this little short, fat body with
massive teeth?
Yeah.
No, paleontologists are good at what they do, and it does really resemble... Their teeth are almost identical to a great white's tooth. So I do think they were very visually similar to, like, you know, phenotypically similar to a great white shark. So they looked very, very much the same.
So is a great white like a direct descendant of it, or is there even any way to tell that because of...
Yeah, that's the thought. So great whites belong to a group of sharks called mackerel sharks. So like them, mako sharks, salmon sharks, they all kind of have this like pointy nose and like kind of like ragged looking teeth, and... They think that a megalodon was an ancient species of mackerel shark.
Wow. Okay.
Sorry, I'm rambling about sharks. I can
no, not at all. I love that. I love it. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to me. I was thinking about you were talking about the species of fish that they discovered in the 70s, and people talk about, you know, things that are way near the bottom of the ocean that maybe haven't been discovered yet. But I do think it's important for people to keep in mind. You know me, I love believing in really crazy, weird things, but the sheer size, and the ocean is a very, very big place, but
yeah, and the other thing to think about is like a shark that size has to eat big stuff, right? And so it would be feeding on whales or like, you know, really big marine mammals, whales. It'd be whales. That'd be the only thing that would really provide it with the kind of food it needs. We would be finding whales with big megalodon sized bites out of them.
Yeah.
And we're not finding that. That's not something that's showing up. So I just don't think it's a possibility that they're still around.
So Wes, I think we should do, Byron, can you do your weird spoiler alert thing? Because I want to talk to Wes about the end of the movie that like wildly confused me.
This is the point in the show where we spoil parts of a movie. This film, The Black Demon, I believe its theatrical run has ended, and it is going to be available on VOD on the 30th. So Paramount's bad. Doing it. I don't know what the hell they're thinking, but there's going to be some spoiler talk coming up right now.
I'm going to also give one more warning. If you are a millennial female or male, for that matter, who has a particular attachment to the movie Sweet Home Alabama, I recommend you do not watch this. Okay. Because it will ruin forever and always.
Josh Lucas.
Like, you will never, ever be able to watch him again. Ever. Ever. And that's really the only one that I would imagine is going to matter to most people. But, he is maybe the worst acting performance I've seen this year.
Dang. It's pretty bad.
The high point for me, Wes, was when the guy was yelling at him about his fancy watch that the oil people bought and his red shirt. And he goes, it's burgundy.
Yeah.
There's a difference. As someone who's worked in apparel, Kelly.
It was so bad, Wes.
It is. It was awful. It's like nonstop. For me, the thing that was just so perplexing was that I feel like they kind of wanted you to still like the family, even though they were like caught up in all this like oil industry conspiracy and everything. They wanted them to be the heroes. Or you to care about them or be emotionally invested in them. And I have never cared less about characters on screen than I did this family. Like,
I cared about.
It's not like I wanted them to die. Yeah, I just like.
The oil rig guy, I wanted him to make it. The guy that had been sitting out there forever. Oh, see, I really liked him. I cared about him. But Wes, have you seen the movie The Abyss?
I have. Yeah, I love The Abyss.
Okay. Byron, as we near the end of this movie, we find out that unbeknownst to him, the company has rigged up some bomb underneath the oil rig that's going to go off and going to like sink the whole thing into the ocean.
So wait, what's the point of the company blowing up their own oil rig? Was this to kill the shark?
I don't know.
It's unclear. I mean, maybe because like the liability had gotten so extreme.
I think they'd realized that like that people had found out about all their lies. And so they're trying to just get rid of the evidence.
There's a lot of plot in this. Like,
there's not very much, actually.
I'm just saying, it feels like there's like a lot of like corruption and cultural. Like,
all of it is tacked on to like the last 10 minutes. I swear the body of this movie is just them like talking in circles about what's going on. It's weirdly like mind numbing. It's like really weird long shots with like kind of like a buzz. Like it's like when you see a scene in a movie where like the drugs start to hit and things kind of start to like fade out. That's how every scene in this movie is. It makes your brain shut down.
It's really terrible. I had
to like look up and be like, oh yeah, I have to watch this movie.
I'm still watching this. I can't look at my phone.
Yeah.
Promise next time it's going to be a lot better.
Yeah, we got to wait until there's actually a good one now. At the end, he, like, finally, this guy's going to redeem himself.
This is my favorite part.
Gets into a scuba suit and goes to, like, I guess was going to put the bomb in the shark's mouth?
He was going to be bait for the shark to eat him, but then he was going to detonate the bomb as the shark ate him.
So, like, isn't it Jaws 2 does that, I think, right?
Yeah.
Jaws, is it 2 or 3D? I can't remember. But
I think
There's a plot point where there's like a
It wasn't
a tank.
One. That's all I can tell you.
It was not Jaws 1.
I mean, right. It was similar in that they blew up the shark at the end, but there's this part. My favorite part of the entire movie is like Josh Lucas goes down in the scuba and he calls his wife and he's like, honey, we're going to have to take a rain check on those margaritas. I literally put my hands on the side of my head and just went, oh my God, this movie.
So, Wes, what it felt like, it felt like ChatGPT got a hold of the abyss and the scene where he's like going down into the trench and he's trying to type to his wife and they just missed the point, but they figured that this was something cool to try to include. And it was so bad. I mean, he like has the conversation with his son about how he's the captain now of the family.
Jesus.
Yeah.
There's no way.
It's painful. It really is.
It's so bad.
But that part was funny, at least to me, because it like finally, like that was my problem with this movie. It was that it never was like campy and funny because it was like so over the top and there was so little shark that it was just like they took themselves way too seriously. And this was finally a point where I was like, okay, a laugh. Even though it was an unintended laugh, at least this movie made me feel something at all, you know?
Yeah.
Byron,
I wish you would have watched it because you should have suffered as well.
It does feel like I dodged something, but I also am sad for both of you. So I wish I would have bit a bullet.
Well, there's a movie we watched, Byron, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, called Muck?
Oh, of course, yeah.
I think this one might actually replace Muck as the worst movie I've ever watched for this show.
Well, let's get to our final thoughts on this, Kelly. Do you want to do highs and lows real quick?
Yeah, my high and low are the same thing. It made me laugh. But it also was so bad and stupid. And that was the burgundy shirt comment. Very comical, but was not supposed to be. It was really terrible. Actually, I think the little boy in this might have been able to do a decent job acting. He's never been in anything else. The daughter was really annoying. The wife was a hypocrite. And Josh Lucas will never again be the adorable hometown dude that Reese Witherspoon goes back to.
That sucks.
So this movie is unbelievably bad and different from other fun bad movies because it is not aware of its own being bad. So I give the black shark I give the black demon 1.8 hours of ChatGPT writing.
Okay. Wes, do you have a high point and a low point for this?
Yeah, my high point was the margaritas line. Like, it honey, is, you're going to have to take a rain check on those margaritas or whatever, something like that.
That was exactly what it was.
For me, like, made me laugh and like, kind of have an out-of-body experience for a second. And then my low point, honestly, is probably the kids because they are just, like, they're at each other the entire movie. Like, they constantly are bickering and fighting. It just gets to be so annoying and overdone that I just, every time they were on screen, I was like, God, these kids.
Well, and the things they fight about don't make sense. Like, the little boy is telling his sister that the only captain she knows is Captain Morgan. Like, it makes no sense. None of it.
Yeah. They lost me at the very beginning because the little boy comes in, he's like, he has a fish fact and he says, what's the most plentiful fish in Baja? And then the answer is striped marlin, which is definitely not the case.
No.
I don't know what it is, but it's not a striped marlin. It's not that. Yeah. Right. So,
wow. They couldn't even do a simple fact check on that. Yeah.
No.
In
Tooth and Claw, we do claws. So oh, that's I'm going to give it, I'll give it a one claw rating.
One claw.
Because I at least wanted some like fun shark deaths and some fun attacks, and we didn't even get that. So it was a one claw.
Wow.
I'd never recommend this one to anyone, not even as like a funny kind of watch. Like, hey, you need to see this because it's so silly. It's just not, it's not worth your time.
Two things I'd like to add kind of to make up for my lack of participation. I did just look at Twitter to see what folks are saying about this film because we've got your thoughts. I'd like to hear some other people's. No one has seen this movie.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I saw one person said he was in the theater waiting for it, but didn't say anything afterwards.
I think it has a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes last time I checked. Okay.
The other thing I'd like to do to really tie this all together, Kelly, is back in February, I asked ChatGPT to write me a movie like Cocaine Bear.
No.
And it gave me this, so I thought I'd just pull this up. Well, first of all, the title of the movie is Moonshine Mountain, and the log line is, when a group of college students stumble upon a secret moonshine distillery hidden in the Appalachian Mountains, they accidentally awaken a monstrous bear that's been hibernating in the barrels of potent liquor. Now the students must fight for their lives as they try to outrun a ferocious and high-as-a-kite creature that's hot on their trail. And the synopsis goes on. Moonshine Mountain follows a group of college students, of course. They're taking their weekend. They plan to hike, camp, and enjoy some good old-fashioned moonshine, but little do they know they're about to stumble upon something far more dangerous than they ever imagined. As they hike through the woods, the group comes across a hidden moonshine distillery. We know that. It's deserted, but the barrels of moonshine are still there, ready to be sampled. The students eagerly take a swig, not realizing that the moonshine has been tainted by the blood of a monstrous bear that's been hibernating in the barrels. The bear awakens. I don't know what the tainted part has anything to do with this. Angry and confused, and starts chasing the students through the mountains. But this isn't your average bear. It's high on moonshine, Kelly. And completely out of control, the students are forced to band together to fight for their lives as they try to outsmart the ferocious and unpredictable creature. As they run and hide, the students also learn more about the history of the moonshine distillery and the sinister forces that have been protecting it for generations. They realize that the bear is just the tip of the iceberg and that they're in way over their heads. Moonshine Mountain is a thrilling horror comedy that combines the backwoods charm of Deliverance with the irreverent humor of Tucker and Dale versus Evil. It's a wild ride through the Appalachian Mountains filled with laughs, scares, and plenty of moonshine. So,
okay, that's actually better than this.
Well,
so,
yeah, I'd watch that.
I would watch it too. But Kelly, you might be right that ChatGPT at least, like, you know, blocked out the
outlined
film.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
So
I kind of hope that's the case, because I think it would be a good test for showing that ChatGPT cannot write a good movie.
Yeah.
And I would hope that, like, I'd hope they try it on some movies and realize, like, oh no, this needs a human touch. We don't need AI writing movies.
Please.
Yeah. Yeah. I really think that's what I'm going to be researching tonight when I can't sleep. I'm going to be laying in bed with my phone trying to find evidence somewhere that this really was written by ChatGPT.
I mean, there's a lot of evidence in Moonshine Mountain, honestly. Like,
I'm going to send an email to Lex Friedman and see if he'll do his next podcast on that.
Maybe. Speaking of podcasts, Wes has one too. Wes, can you share a little bit about your show, Tooth and Claw?
Yeah, I'm one of the three hosts of Tooth and Claw. It's a podcast where we talk about animal attacks. Each episode, we'll go over the story of an animal attack. And then I'm a wildlife biologist, so I'll break down why the attack actually happened, why often it's the people that are at fault, the people that did something to trigger the behavior of the animal. The whole point of the podcast is to teach people how to be better prepared for encounters with wildlife and how to kind of predict animal behavior rather than just being afraid of animals when you go out and recreate. So it's a conservation podcast too. We talk a lot about wildlife conservation, which is my true passion in life. So you can get it wherever you find your podcasts.
Can folks follow you, like Twitter, Instagram?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram @GrizzKid is my tag. Not too active on there as of late, but Tooth and Claw is also Tooth and Claw Podcast @ Tooth and Claw Podcast is our Twitter handle. So, or our Instagram handle.
Wonderful.
My brain's shutting down, but
yeah
that's okay. Yeah. But we blame exhausting. The movie. It's all right.
Yeah.
Kelly, where are you found?
Researching.
You're also avoiding Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. I just can't I do it too. Anymore.
Yeah.
I can't. Yeah, I just can't. Bad. I can't pretend. You can email me, though, kelly@frightday.com, or you could try to find me on Instagram, but I have pictures of my kids, so it's private, otherwise my husband screams. So, I mean, but you can, if you can find me and prove to me that you're not a serial killer, maybe I'll add you.
And I'm @ Byron McCoy on Twitter, Gab, Truth Social, you know, all the great places that people hang out.
Yep.
@ Byron McCoy on Instagram is probably the best way to find me, and I'm also in our Discord, discord.frightday.com, best place to find us there. Wes, it's always a pleasure. I promise you, the next film, if you
I'm
come
gonna
back,
watch it first. I'm gonna watch it first.
It'll be better.
All right, I'm holding you to it.
It'll be better than this, yeah, and it'll really be better. Will. It'll be better than Beast, even.
All right,
that's a guarantee.
Okay,
it is a guarantee.
I'm looking
it
forward to it.
Is.
been listening to an Audio Wool original, produced by Byron McCoy. Theme music provided by Cemeteries. For more programs like this, visit audiowool.co.